Hi, it's Dave. This is part three in my series of How to Get Rich. In part one and two, I introduced the concepts of taking your earnings and exchanging them for ownership in assets that grow and compound over time. Financial wealth, I think, is about owning assets that can grow even without your involvement. In this episode, I'm going to share how to know when you're really rich. Some people call this financial freedom. Others call it early retirement. Whatever you call it, I think there's a certain point where your assets are growing without you and you don't need to work or earn money with your time. All right, so how does this look like? Before answering this question, I do want to make a clarification. I'm just talking about finances in this episode. I know there are some who will rightfully say that being rich isn't about finances or money. It's rather about health and family, relationships, and even character. And I actually agree. I do think that there is a distortion in the financial community that tends to exalt finances to an extreme. For example, people talk about their net worth, as in how much money or assets they have, but true net worth can't be quantified. And I cringe at people correlating their worth and the amount of money they have. There's lots of examples like this, and I think it's one of the reasons why some people are turned off from making money and being rich. Sometimes it seems so tainted, like people just are looking out for themselves, but I don't think it has to be that way. All right, so how do you know when you're financially rich? I think there is a subjective angle to this. For example, a young kid with $1,000 could feel like the richest person in the world, especially when none of his friends have anything close to that amount of money. Then there are some that are just content. Give them a room, a car, some food, no debt, and a decent job, and they're happy and they feel like they don't need anything else. So I do want to affirm these assessments and the subjective nature of being rich. But I also want to present a different angle. Apart from the feelings, is there a certain point of owning assets where there's a clear distinction? For example, kind of like a fork in the road where it impacts your life in a profound way. And I do think actually there is a point, and it's when you don't need to work anymore, but the growth and or the income from your assets cover all of your living expenses, and yet the assets keep on growing. In other words, you reach a point where the assets are growing even after covering your expenses. Now, some would say that this is unrealistic, that maybe people are being spoiled, or it's kind of like you're becoming a trust fund kid, for example. And I'm not going to defend the morality of this right now, but I want to just explore it apart from bias for a moment. So what does this look like specifically? Let's say you have $1 million and you put the money into a CD or savings account, giving you 1% per year. That would give you $10,000 in interest every year. But let's say your living expenses are $30,000 a year. So if you stopped working, then you would be losing $20,000 from your $1 million stash every year. That's a decreasing financial situation. Further, you need to factor in inflation, where purchasing power of a dollar shrinks every year. Let's say you use 2 to 3%, so that's another $20,000 to $30,000 you need to factor in. So just having $1 million in the bank and getting 1% interest, it means that if you're not working and you're trying to live off of that $1 million, then your stash is going to shrink every year. Let's say about $40,000 to $50,000 a year. So let's say you're making $10,000 in interest minus $30,000 in living expenses and minus $20,000 to $30,000 for inflation. So this can be actually kind of a stressful situation. I call it a shrinking retirement. Your pot shrinks the longer you don't work. So the early years of retirement are less stressful than the later years of retirement, where your finances become increasingly tighter. Now, contrast this to a person or a couple that has $1 million in a fantastic real estate property in a fantastic area. It's high demand and it's growing. Let's say this piece of real estate produces $40,000 a year in income. Now, this might be a bit aggressive, but I'll explain in a bit. Let's say also this property is in such a great area that the property actually appreciates at 4% every year. Now, this might change year to year, but let's say that's the average, even considering down years. And then let's say this person has the same $30,000, let's say, in living expenses. So what happens? They're actually making $40,000 in income from the property, so that completely covers their living expenses, and they have $10,000 left over to do whatever they want, whether it could be investing in other things as well. And then the property value actually increases 4% every year due to appreciation. So the value of their assets actually go up every year, even without them working, and it goes up faster than inflation. This situation I call a growing retirement, meaning you don't need to work for money or earn money, yet your living expenses are covered and your assets continue to grow year after year. So in 10 years or 20 years, you'll have far more than you do right now. All right, before going on, here are a few details or caveats. I'm trying to simplify things to get across the power of what a growing retirement could look like through the ownership of assets that grow and compound over time, even without your involvement. But my example is just an example. So first, it might be difficult to get $40,000 in income from a solid $1 million property in a fantastic area. See, the concept that unlocks how to assess this is called the cap rate. When you look at a real estate property, the so-called cap rate is the percent of how much income you make from that property on an annual basis divided by the cost of that property. So if you paid $1 million for a property and you're getting $40,000 in income from it, then your cap rate for that property is 4%. So generally speaking, in my experience, the best and highest demand areas, you might get a cap rate of, let's say, 2 or 3% or maybe 4%. The less desirable an area is, right, generally speaking, the higher the cap rate you can expect because you incur certain additional costs. Perhaps you have more unstable tenants or less, right, appreciation that you can count on. So if you want to take more risks, you can get a higher cap rate of, let's say, 6, 7, or 8% or even higher. But again, it's more risk. Also, real estate can be involved since it's dealing with tenants. And if you want to deal less with tenants, you'll need to hire a property management company to help, and you'll need to factor in those fees as well. There are other assets that can provide similar yet different dynamics, right, compared to real estate. For example, there are dividend-paying stocks or even real estate investment trusts called REITs. Let's say a dividend-paying stock pays you a 4% annual dividend. So in some ways, that can act like a 4% cap rate real estate property. Except with dividend stocks, it could be more risky if the underlying company is losing its competitive advantage and its valuation could suffer, right, long-term or in the years going forward. So it might be harder to count on the appreciation unless you pick the right companies. Some people might buy the S&P 500 or an index fund that tracks the total or the entire stock market. And then they liquidate 3 to 4% per year to cover their living expenses. And they hope that the S&P 500 or the index fund, right, that they have their money in continues to appreciate faster than the 3 to 4% that they take out every year. And I think historically this does work out, but you never know what will happen in the future. It could be a huge market crash that takes a while to recover. So there is a certain level of uncertainty to this approach. The most solid approach, I think, is to have an excess of assets to the point where you have a lot of options. For example, if your assets are in the, say, the S&P 500, then let's say you own $2 million in the S&P 500 and you take out just 2% per year. So that's $40,000 per year. So you have a better chance of your assets growing faster than your withdrawals. With, for example, $2 million in real estate, you're able to get a property that's in a better area, albeit with a lower cap rate, but the property will likely appreciate more predictably over time. Lastly, if you're gonna have your assets in growth stocks, then you're gonna need a bigger margin of safety because of the inherent volatility with growth stocks. Anyways, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, and each person is actually gonna have a different kind of set of requirements in terms of living expenses. In some countries, in certain situations, your living expense can be actually really quite low and you'll need less assets. In other situations, you want to be in a certain place where your living expense is higher, so that changes the equation. I think the point being is that I think there is a point where a shrinking retirement can actually become a growing retirement. So there's a profound shift and change that can happen. And it's almost like a day and night difference. And that's the point, I think, where I think you know you're really rich, as in terms of finances and being financially rich, where you don't need to work anymore, yet your assets continue to grow even after covering your living expenses. All right, so here's some objections. Some people might cry foul, right? That's not fair. Some people have so much money that they don't need to work and they become lazy. That's why our society is going downhill. There's too many entitled people living off of wealth. And trust me, I get it. And I think this objection has to deal with more on how people spend their time, right, once their assets cover their living expenses. And I think that's up to each person. But I do think for those that are trying to help people and trying to make the world a better place, that reaching this point can actually allow them to free up a lot of their time to really pursue what's most important. Others might object and say, hey, this is way too difficult to achieve. As I've shared in previous episodes, I have never said that becoming rich is going to be easy. There are many get rich programs or people trying to trivialize or minimize what it takes to grow assets to the point where they can cover their living expenses and still, right, the assets can grow on their own. You can have some like kind of minimal starting assets and those assets can grow, but that's like the beginning point. To get to the place where you're really, let's say, financially rich, these assets need to continue to grow and get to the point of defying gravity. It's kind of like liftoff, where the assets don't shrink anymore, even after covering your living expenses when you're not working, but they continue to grow. I guess it's like literally going to the moon, right, with your assets. Anyways, in this episode, my goal was to pitch this vision of ownership, where owning assets that appreciate and grow can shift one's financial position from a place of shrinking retirement to one of growing retirement. And there's a lot of profound things, I think, that happen when that shift takes place. Again, some people, it can just accentuate their selfishness, but for others, it can unleash freedom to pursue their dreams and help others in ways not possible before. So in recap, here's the wealth building cycle. Number one, you create value by solving things, improving things, and creating things. People recognize that value and they trade money for the value that you create. I've talked about this in episode number one and episode number two. All right, then number two, you take that money and you buy assets that grow and compound even without your involvement. So this is kind of like what I'm talking about in this episode. Even if it's a small beginning, right? And it's just buying $1,000 of stocks or, you know, going into other just assets that are not just a savings account or interest. And then number three, your assets eventually reach a point where they can continually grow even after covering your living expenses and you're not working. At that time, you can use your time and resources to make the world a better place. All right, here's a few sober words to close on. We can't guarantee anything in life. So even if you reach the point of growing retirement, the reality is there's always risks. That's kind of one of my qualms about calling it financial freedom, because I think there's at a point where everything, right, can be taken away. For example, a meteor can fall on Earth, wiping out humanity, right? There could be a huge plague, or we could have a World War III or something. And who knows how long each of us will live, and we can't take, right, our possessions or these so-called owner assets that we own with us. So in some ways, everything we have is just for a sliver of time. And in the bigger scope of history and time, I don't even know if that sliver is long enough for us to rightfully think or claim that we really own the assets that we have. Maybe it's more like borrowing. We're all living on borrowed time, and I hope we all make the most of it. Anyways, hope this video has been helpful. Go ahead, like, and subscribe. All my videos can be found as an audio podcast. Just search for Dave Lee on Investing in your favorite podcast player. I'm on Twitter at HeyDave7, and this is been part three of my series, How to Get Rich. I still have a few more episodes lined up in the next week or so. So stay tuned and we'll see you guys in my next video. Thanks.